Welcome to the Living Farms podcast, where voices from around the world come together to shape the future of biodynamic agriculture.
Well, here we are in this beautiful conversation podcast, and we are always visited by different teachers and colleagues and farming people. And now we have the honor of presenting or sharing with Dennis Klocek. He is an amazing teacher. I've known him for quite a while. He started as an artist, which is very significant because there's many ways of entering into spiritual world, anthroposophy, and biodynamics. There's different doors. And entering through the door of art is quite peculiar. I have, fortunately, the same experience. And then going in through that door of the art gives you a perspective of life. And then going into science, Dennis is also a scientist, a teacher, a researcher. If you visit him in his small garden in Fair Oaks, California, you will find a lab, a two-shelled lab, and you will find the space where he has spent so many years doing research. He's also a gardener because that is a gardener. And then, of course, he's an alchemist. I first met Dennis many years ago. When I started in biodynamics, I was looking, where in the Americas can I find a teacher? And I went to Fair Oaks and I met with Dennis. I met the garden there and the work of Harold Hoven in that garden also. And I immediately went in contact with something so beautiful, and I found somebody who has devoted his life to teaching, to research, to sharing. And so many people have been influenced by Dennis. So many farmers have a seed of his vision of anthroposophy, of biodynamics, alchemy, and so many other things that he touches on. He's serious about research, so he has been into many aspects of the research, whether it's the weather, whether it's art, whether it's working deeply into medicine, in particular medicinal plants, the biodynamic preparations, working with the winemakers. There's been so much work done by Dennis, and I think anybody that works in biodynamics in the USA has a little bit of his teachings in his heart. And one of the qualities that Dennis also brings is that when you finish one of his courses, you're so inspired. You want to go out there and do the work. You want to see life in a different way. So I'm honored to have you here, Dennis. This is such a beautiful moment. And now that your course has been translated, one of your books, because Dennis has written many books, is now translated into Spanish, and will be continuing that path of translating your work into Spanish. Now you're reaching out to the whole of the Americas. And it's so beautiful because now that I have the experience of working in Europe, there's different ways of looking at biodynamics. And that's what is so alive about biodynamics. We have a particular way of doing it and viewing it in North America. There's other aspects now that Asia and Africa and so many other countries are developing strongly in biodynamics. It's so enriching to see how different ways of looking at things come together. And none of them is right or wrong. We're just exploring what Rudolf Steiner said, which was not a fixed idea. It was more like, why don't you look in this direction? There might be something interesting. I found this.
Right. Indications.
What did you find?
Indications, yes. Not dogma. Yeah.
One of the beautiful things about your teachings, Dennis, is you always invite us to have a fluid, dynamic, living understanding of life. This is present in all of your research. Because we have to confess that no matter how hard we try, we fall into abstract thinking. You can see that clearly in the calendar work. It's so vast and beautiful, but then we can reduce it into, oh, today is a root day. Really? What does that mean in, exactly. in a profound
That's
way?
Right. What does that mean? Yeah.
And so, but this is needed. We need to fall into that materialistic reality to fulfill our development. But how do we find ways to help us stay in the living, in a dynamic realm? And I think Rudolf Steiner strived to show us this. He showed us how to lift ourselves out of material rational thinking and into the imaginative living thought. And I think you constantly do this in your work when you bring alchemical principles. That to me was such a revelation because I didn't know that underlying the biodynamic course and anthroposophy, there was so much of that alchemical world still living and moving into the future by Rudolf Steiner.
Yeah.
So one way we enter the alchemical understanding is through the elements, through the rhythms, and in their manifestation in nature. And maybe we can start with that, you know, the dance, the cosmos is dancing. We right. are now in this second part of the cosmos of analyzing this aspect of the cosmos influence in biodynamics and in the human world.
Right.
And this is the dance between fixed and mobile stars. It's all about rhythm. And I remember you once telling us, understanding rhythm is the key to the research of the future. You said something like that.
That's what I believe, yeah. Yeah. So I could actually start with an anecdote about Rudolf Steiner, about that. So when I was a young man, I met an older anthroposophist. His name was Hartmut von Jetze. And a beautiful, beautiful soul with a kind of a little mischievous little twinkle in his eye, you know, sweet guy. And he was an old man at the time, and he told me that when he was a young man, he had the opportunity to kind of get in the back door at the agriculture course and sit in the back as a young man. So he said during a break, a group of older farmers came to him with a question. And they said, you know, Dr. Steiner, we don't like our tractors. We like our horses. So we can talk to our horses and we get things done. But if we have a problem with the tractor, it's just like this machine there. And we don't like that. We like to have this kind of personal relationship. And so Hartman said, this sly kind of smile came across Steiner's face. And he said to the old farmers, well, why don't you thank your tractor? And I've always thought of that. I do a lot of woodworking and tools. Every time I pick up a tool and I put it down, I thank it. And there's something in that. I think Steiner was not talking about the tractor. He was talking about the elemental beings that are in the forces of the tractor. To somehow be able to pay a debt that we have. And with our devices today, that make us think that the more money you have, the better person you are. That idea of giving recognition and thanks to the forces in the device seems very antiquated. But in Rudolf Steiner's work, he explains that there are hierarchies of elemental beings. And the way he described that was, I think, in the way that was working with the building of the Gertianum. He said, in the elemental world, there are architects, artisans, and workers. And the workers are the elemental beings. They are the workers. But he said, the artisans are what he called elementary beings. And he said above them are the architects. And the architects conceive the plan. The artisans make it possible to have the processes to work out the plan. And then the workers work the plan. So he said, in our language, in the scientific language, the workers are the forces in the world. The artisans are the laws of the forces in the world. And the architects, he said, are a very special group of elemental beings that he said are the spirits of the rotation of time. So we have the spirits of rotation of time as the architects of nature, the elementary beings as the laws of those architectural ideas, and then the workers are the elementals themselves. And my understanding is that the spirits of the rotation of time are serving the archangels that give the archangels give the spirits of time rotation using their forces, the forces of the four seasons. So the rhythms in the natural world are not just random throwaway things. They are actually a whole series of hand-down forces from the spirit to humans. And we enslave them in our devices. So by trying to go back through the forces themselves and then the laws of them, and then the spirits of rotation of time, we, Rudolf Steiner said, as you get higher, they act more like a personality, and you can petition them and interact with them and ask them questions that you can't really do with the elemental beings because they are pretty much unconscious forces. But as you go up through the laws of nature, you can interact them with your consciousness. But when you go up into the realm of the spirits of time rotation, you need to make an effort to understand their language. And that's then the work with the cosmos in biodynamics.
It's so beautiful. One of the most challenging things when you start reading anthroposophy and the biodynamics course is you find that you have to stand in another place to be able to understand. You have to open your capacity to bring new ideas that are outside of the constriction of rational science and rational thinking. And this type of images that you just brought to us help us expand our consciousness and say, okay, the world is much bigger than what I see. Yeah. How can I interact with it? And where do I find the clues to start in a simple way? And I think the rhythms are important. Sometimes you don't have four seasons in the tropics, but you do have rhythm. It expresses in a different way.
It's subtle, yeah.
It's different, yes. So finding rhythm is, I think, a good door to enter into this world. But then you get in contact with the alchemical principles. And that is such an array or a mindset that helps you read the agriculture course in a different way.
Yeah, as a dynamic, I mean, biodynamic, you know, hello. It's a dynamic. It's not a fixed thing. And we actually, according to Steiner, we have a body elemental that's composed of the elemental forces in us that is the liaison to these higher levels of the elemental world. It's our, like, a go-between for us.
Yes.
And that's connected to our thinking and the way we use our imagination and how we go into sleep and what we dream about and how we can take pictures into sleep in a rukshal of things that are happening in the garden.
It's a whole dynamic that we have to be aware of. When we stand in the morning, early in the morning, and look at our field and
Absolutely.
Say, what do I need to do today?
Yeah.
Then any ideas here? But then you're also training your perception and your soul to be able to do this. And then you find rhythm. And then you can tap into that rhythm. You can work with the rhythm. You can dance with that rhythm to be able to work with the principles of biodynamics to have at the higher level that redemption you're talking about, that connection between Earth and cosmos to fulfill our evolution, but also to produce good medicinal plants and good food for collaboration in our
For expansion. Collaboration. So the food is not just to keep the body going. It's to be able to develop forces that allow me to perceive the rhythms in a different way, to perceive the seasonal changes. This is Ayurveda. Change your diet as the season has changed. You know?
That's so important. And the different parts of the world have different diets for a reason.
Sure.
They are integrated into rhythm. The thing is that we've fallen so far away from rhythm that we don't even recognize it. I always imagine that ancient people could feel the moon cycle in their bodies. They didn't have to look outside.
That's the body elemental that would feel that, yeah.
So in your experience, Dennis, how is this work with the rhythms brought and how do you perceive it to give clues to young farmers, to give clues to even scientists of working with that? You brought us a little clip that we will be showing and sharing with our guests to this course and this podcast, and that will show in detail what you are bringing that comes from Rudolf Steiner and alchemical principles and other sources. But could you help us introduce us into this reading of the rhythm?
Right. There's something I like to call the soil clock. Soil clock. And it goes to an alchemical principle that the planetary configurations on a given day get fixed into the soil when you disturb it. That there's a potential in the way in which the metals in the soil, the potassium and calcium, and in the soil sap, and then in interaction of the humus with the root hairs and all of that, they are continually being changed by the movement of the sun and the moon in front of the fixed stars with the other planets. And the law of that is that when you disturb the soil, basically it's like writing a new program or changing your operating system. You know, things change when you upgrade your OS. You know, you have different things that you have to deal with. So that's the way, my understanding is that's the way the plants operate. So in the little clip, I really focus on something that came up after 30 years of research on planetary motion. I began to realize the sun is a big deal. You know, takes 30 years for the penny to drop for that. But it's even bigger than the moon because, you know, if you look at the literature, there's a lot of moon calendars. But I haven't found anything in literature that describes the action of the solar length of day. That's what the clip is about. Mm-hmm. So the way I would use that, say I want to plant cabbage. So I have to observe, when does the cabbage do its most rapid growing? Where in the yearly cycle does that happen? So if I do that, I'm drawn to the relationship between the vertical forces at the solstices and the horizontal forces in equinox periods. There's a symmetry between the equinoxes during the growing season that has to do with the length of day at your latitude and longitude. Your latitude and longitude are very specific to your flora and fauna in your ecosystem. They are like a guide. Your latitude and longitude are like a focal point for the rhythmic forces. So if I'm going to plant cabbage, I know that right in the 2 or 3 weeks after the fall equinox is the most rapid growth of a cabbage. And so I will look for the length of day during that time. And in the spring, do all my bed prep for my cabbages, putting in compost and turning and everything in that time frame. And then that means that in that soil where the cabbages are going to be grown, I can put a lot of compost in there. I can turn it. I use a lot of fava beans and clover for green manuring. I let them grow through the seasons. So by the time that soil, I put my transplants in, trying to recapitulate where the moon was when I disturbed the soil in the spring, those cabbages are programmed to expand in the time frame of the fall equinox because the soil is programmed to that length of day. I call it the soil clock. And it sounds complicated, but once you see it work, you realize that everything is listening to this. The pests, the funguses, the blooming periods, leaf fall, ripening, they are all in different species linked to each other through the action of the sun, through the action of what Rudolf Steiner would say, the etheric. So that the solar rhythm is a kind of guideline for how you want that cabbage in the fall to unfold. You start right in the spring with that thought form, and you do your fertilizing and everything in the spring so that in the fall, when the cabbage gets put in that ground, the soil already understands what it is supposed to provide for the cabbage.
This is really beautiful. And when people from different parts of the world see us, they connect also to their own cultures.
That's
and
right.
In every culture in the world, the sun was prevailing,
right,
depending on which period of existence, because we did shift from more of a moon to a solar aspect.
Right.
But in Mexico and Latin America, the sun is so prevailing in calendar work, in all of their art, in religious ceremonies.
Right.
But this is the case also in Asia and Africa. So
right.
we can have a new reading of the sun. And now with the aid of expanding our rational understanding of life, which is so important, and expanding it to the spirit consciousness, we get a clearer picture of what that sun is doing in our work, also influencing animals and our own consciousness. So
right.
I think these parameters or these expansion of our understanding is so vital.
There's a website for the Naval Observatory in the U.S. I forget the link, but it's a Naval Observatory. And you can send them your latitude and longitude, and their computers will print out for your latitude and longitude the exact time in minutes of every day for a year. And that position will last for 72 years. So, you know, it's good to go.
Yeah.
And once you have that, that can make a rational basis for observing. I've used that to defeat my squash bugs this year. And it kind of gives me an insight into when they are going to show up and what they're looking for and when. And what I realized was they are opportunists because in the rhythm of the growing of the squash, the first squash set produces very strong leaves that have to atrophy in order to get a second set. And the squash bugs use the base of the leaf that's yellowing. They put a saliva in there to make it rot, and that's their food.
Yeah.
So I take a knife, and as soon as I see those leaves yellowing, I cut them off. And those squash bugs, I have yet to find a bunch of eggs from them. It's just bachelors looking for a lady there hanging out. And my squash are in their fourth set now. And no pathology, no rotting, no nothing.
Sometimes I think that the whole nature is saying the humans are so detached from rhythm that we can take advantage of that because they have no
right.
conscious of
rhythm.
You know,
rhythm. We just make a spray to kill the things.
Yeah.
But if you take away their little hiding place, you take away their food source, there's nothing to attract them. And that's a rhythm that they are connected to for that particular crop.